Good afternoon. My name is Bahati Williams with the Broken Historical Society. Today is April 11th, 2008, and I'm here at Restoration Plaza on the fifth floor at the boardroom. This is for the Bedford-Stuyvesant Restoration Corporation 40th Anniversary Oral History Project. I am here with, state your name, please.
My name is Bernice McRae.
Okay, so we're just going to start by, you know, just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've actually been at Restoration for 30 years. I grew up here. This is basically the only real true job I've had. I work both and live in the community, and I enjoy serving. And there's a lot to be done in our community. And, you know, I think it's a blessing that I'm able to contribute and give something back.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, could you tell me, since you grew up in Bed-Stuy, can you tell me more about growing up in Bed-Stuy?
I didn't grow up here, but I've lived here for a good portion of my life. I actually grew up in Georgia, a place in the South. And to tell the truth, I found that Brooklyn to be closest to what I was used to as a child in the both Manhattan and the Bronx, because I've lived in all three boroughs. And Brooklyn, you know, gave me that feeling of home. Much closer than any of the other two. So it just kind of settled in Brooklyn. But, and it's a, you know, working and living in the same community, you get to see a lot. And you also participating in, you know, keeping the dollars within the community by shopping and using, you know, the businesses that's located in the community. And that's what it's about. You know, that's the only way a community would strive is if they're able to keep their dollars, you know, turning over in their community.
Okay, so, how did you come to work in Bed-Stuy?
Well, because Restoration is located in Bed-Stuy, but I came to Restoration as a referrer of someone else I knew. I was in the market of looking for a job, and I was asked to come and interview for a job here. That was before they located here. They actually were located in the Hotel Granada at the time was on Ashland Place in downtown Brooklyn. While they were working to get this building prepared to house the corporation. So it made sense to be located in Bed-Stuy because most of our work took place there. So if you're trying to convince someone that an area is good for you, it's a striving area, and you are not living there yourself, how convincing would your conversation be? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So if you're there, happen to develop and watching it as it develop and being a part of the development, then I think your story would be a lot more convincing than if you're on the other side of town saying, you know, just stay there or come there. So I think it made sense to have Bedford-Stuyvesant located in the heart of, to have Restoration located in the heart of Bedford-Stuyvesant. So as from being a part of the corporation, then, you know, as I end up in Bed-Stuy because the home office was located in Bed-Stuy. I had other opportunities to go other places, and if I had looked hard enough, I'm sure I could have found something else, maybe Midtown or what have you. But it's a different feeling when you kind of like doing, you can see the results of your labor more firsthand when you're working that close with people, you know, with grassroots people. And it's just a different kind of satisfaction when you're able to be that close to what you're working with and who you're working with.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, can you describe Bedford-Stuyvesant at the time?
Well, first of all, it was not as diversified as it is now, and it was probably a different mix of businesses. You had a lot of the businesses then were owner operated. Now a lot of them are just tenanted. You know, the people own the buildings, but they're renting the space from them. So it was kind of like a mom and pop, but most of the people who ran the business owned the entire property. And that went on for quite a while. And then I guess when there was a slump in the economy, a lot of those owners had to sell or close up. And then, you know, in order to get income, they would rent out the space to someone, you know, other people, rather than trying to stay there and being the owner-operator. So, you know, you can see the change. And it's still, I think you still have more people that's renting commercial space than actually owning it today. You know, that's just the way the trend is. And it's a lot more diversified. It's, I guess you would say, almost like the United Nations. You know, you have, I probably can even name all of the different ethnic groups that are in Bed-Stuy. It's like almost like a melting pot.
Wow.
And it makes it that much more interesting because you have a lot of different cultures. You see a lot of different, in terms of merchandise, and you see a lot of different, you have a lot of variety to choose from, including food products. And culturally, you get to see a rich mixture of all the cultures from time to time.
Okay. Okay, so has the need for restoration changed, or has it stayed the same?
Has the need changed? I don't think the need has changed, because there will always be a need for housing. You know, there are going to always be a need for social services. We might have kind of like realized that it was more of a need for cultural development, because we kind of expanded some of our cultural programs. So I don't think it changed that much, because we still have the same needs. And what we're trying to do also is to emphasize asset creation. You know, to think in terms of owning. When you talk about homes, you know, houses, think more in terms of owning as opposed to renting. You know, like you want to leave some kind of security, a legacy for your family. So we're emphasizing that more. So I don't think the needs change, but we might be looking at them a different way.
Okay, so I heard you said before that you have many different roles here at Restoration. Can you tell me all of those roles?
Oh, God. Well, basically, I deal with providing services to small businesses. And I also coordinate, we've started some financial literacy workshops called Wealth Building Tuesday. And I actually coordinate those series of workshops. We partner with other financial institutions who are actually the presenters. But as far as outreach, working with them to put together the curriculum and stuff, that's part of what I do. Excuse me. In addition to that, any other kind of side activities, but they seem to all be tied into economic development, because wealth creation, which certainly could be a part, it certainly is a part of that, by getting people in a better shape to manage their money, with the hope of them one day owning some asset, either a business or a home, would also spur the economy, because they would have more money, you know, circulating. And for the first time this year, we are managing some income tax preparation sites, low cost. You know, we're trying to get people to apply to see if they qualify for the earned income tax credit. So we're doing some tax preparation sites, these low-cost tax preparation sites, and that also was, you know, part of the I had coordinated and oversee the management of that. So even though it's a lot of little different tasks, but they seem to all connect. Mm-hmm. And as with most nonprofits, it's hard to have sufficient staff, you know, so you're going to always see a need to maybe do more than one, a multitask, as they call it now. Mm-hmm. So, and you're going to get them almost like different jobs because, you know, the tasks are different, but somehow they connect.
When I did some research, you were affiliated with Restoration Capital Fund. So tell me, how did that program get started?
Well, what we had attempted to do is to put all of the economic development activities under one umbrella, so to speak. And we had wanted to apply to CDFI for some funding, but they were looking for like new emerging sort of community development corporations. So we created Restoration Capital Fund to house all of our economic development initiatives and be able to qualify to apply for that funding. And, you know, it's so far still kind of set up the same way, because we have a revolving loan fund that's a part of that, and the wealth building tools and workshops is still part of. And we also have an area called commercial revitalization, and you'll speak with Joy Dabu a little bit later about that, but that's also under economic development also. So Restoration Capital Fund deals specifically with the services to small businesses, the revolving loan fund, and technical assistance.
So you did basically all that under one roof?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me about some of the clients that you work with. I mean, there must be so many.
Well, we do get a lot of people through the doors. However, unfortunately, a lot of them are not ready to be business owners, for many reasons, and most of it is because of lack of sufficient capital. But we've worked with quite a few local businesses. And we have, I don't know if you've heard of Brownstone Books on Lewis Avenue. It's a bookstore. It was the first bookstore in the community for many, many years. I can't think of the number right now. And she's still up and striving, you know, she's growing. She actually now has a contract, I think, at BAM, wherein she's able to do a concession there. And she usually participate in the book, you know, annual book fair. I think that's held at the Marriott Hotel downtown Brooklyn. Another one that's actually flourishing is called Flower Works. She had actually, rent had forced her to move from downtown Brooklyn, Flatbush Avenue, so she was able to put enough capital together to buy a building on this side. So now she owns the building she's running her business from. And there's another young lady we helped buy a Subway franchise. And that's still doing, you know, still up and thriving. And we also had a gentleman who bought a Sterling Optica franchise. And then we have them kind of scattered in other parts of the Brooklyn. But those are kind of like the cool Jive Turkey, I don't know if you've heard about. Excuse me.
That's okay.
It's kind of like an upscale, I guess, deli specialty restaurant. She actually does fried turkeys. Mm-hmm. And for Thanksgiving, she's actually featured on several of the TV stations. She has people coming as far away as Jersey to buy her turkey. And usually there's a line like almost extends around the corner. You know, they're lining up to purchase her turkey.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And they're very tasty. I've had some of them. She was... we had, you know, given her some financial assistance to help her get her business set up. So she's still striving. You know, she's in Clinton Hill, however. But, you know, she serviced customers all over Brooklyn.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me more about other clients? Like, any other recent clients that you had?
Well, at one point, we were doing a program called the Trickle Up Program. And what Trickle Up was doing was giving entrepreneurs or potential entrepreneurs what they call like a boost to create a business. What we're doing, they were giving grants totaling $700. And what was anticipated is that they would take the money, do a business from home until it grows to the need to move into larger space, maybe a storefront or buy a building. And we took the program in with the hope of actually readying candidates for our loan program. Unfortunately, we didn't get anyone that graduated up to that, because it really turned out that $700 was definitely not enough for a place like New York. And some, because this program was like, it does much better in third world countries, because they can take us amount and do a lot more with it than you know, the cost of living in New York is just extremely high. And $700 was not enough to get them to the level of being able to go. You know, it was a boost, but they needed to a much more longer time to grow to being able to do that. And we used to, we would refer them, there was one of our partners, Project Enterprise, that was like between Trickle Up and Alphon. You know, Project Enterprise was like a very good fit, because they had loans of like starting at $1,500, and they graduated. I think their max was about $12,000. Clearly, someone that has graduated to the $12,000 category was more apt to qualify for applying to our fund than a Trickle-Up candidate. So it was, I think that was a good partnership when we started working with Project Enterprise, because we had something to give them as a next step, and then we could still be in line for still another step, you know, if it was need arise.
So, well, some people don't get grants. Can you tell me, what's the process of actually getting a loan?
Well, the process of getting a loan is that, first of all, you must have a business plan that has a good business concept. And in the plan, you must be able to demonstrate that you have a product or service that would sell, you know, people would actually pay you for. And by doing so, you'll be able to generate enough money to pay us back and keep your doors open. We tend to ask the applicant to have at least 10% of what they're saying the project cost will be. We also look for the business to have the potential to create jobs or create a job. It must be minority owned. 51% minority owned, and that's basically it. You know, credit we look at also. Credit, your credit score. What ideally what a loan program is supposed to do is get people ready to be able to go and apply for more traditional finances if the need arise. Most startups cannot walk into a bank and get money, because banks just do not deal with startup businesses. They usually look for a business to be in operation, say, for about 5 years. So what happened to those people who have not made it to 5 years? A program like ours is what we are there for. Even though our criteria does not differ that much from what banks look for, we still want our money repaid so that we can lend it to other applicants. But we will look at a new business, one that's just on paper. If it makes sense, we're in a bank, we're not. So that's the big difference. We're the step before the bank.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So I was just about to ask you that difference between a bank and what you
mm-hmm.
do.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any setbacks to that, like besides a bank? Like,
I think the major difference would be that we would look at a startup, and banks will not. They like for you to come to them with some history. I think generally they look at about minimum 5 years. And their FICO, their FICO score might be. Okay, they might look want to see someone come in with 700 or above. And we might look at someone from, say, 550 to 700, depending on what the business is, how much is needed in the community, the potential to create jobs, and that, you know, your business plan say that it is a product that will sell. And, you know, we compare it to other standards in the industry, and, you know, if it makes sense, we will look at someone with a score that's slightly lower than the 700. But the major difference is that the way we look at startup and the way they look at startup. Startup to them is someone who's been in business, say, maybe about 5 years. We will look at someone who has not opened a door yet but has a good, solid plan. The right amount of capital to invest. And the credit score is somewhere in that neighborhood, you know, 550 to 600 thereabout.
Let's just say I want to own a business. What other ways can you educate me about starting a business? I mean, do you start workshops or
anything? Yes, we do.
Okay, can you describe
as this? Part of our wealth building series, we do have a month where we just deal with business development, and we have someone come in and actually, you know, talk about the steps in opening a business, beginning with putting together a business plan, all the way down to how you go about looking for funding, or what banks look for, what funders look for. We have someone come out and just do workshops on each of those topics. In each series of workshops, we always include one that deals specifically with business development. We also have a collaborative partnership with the WEBO Workshop and Business Enterprise, wherein we're able to refer applicants who have not done a business plan and need some hand-holding or need to be involved in the process. We strongly recommend that they look at a process like WEBO. They do a 13-week in-depth business plan course. You know, you step through, put together. When you finish the 13 weeks, you have all the information you need to go in a business plan. So it's just a matter of massaging it and putting it in more informal form. So that's the purpose of that 13-week course. And you get to be a part of the process where you're doing the research. You're visiting other similar businesses. So you're an active part of putting together the business plan as opposed to paying someone to do a business plan for you.
Wow.
And it's a better learning experience. You actually get to see and feel what's goes into putting together a business than someone just preparing it and giving you a nice looking document. You know what's in it. You can defend it. You can explain it. And that's what should happen when you put together a business plan. Because, you know, it's like when you go apply, it's like almost torn apart. You know, somebody coming at you with all kind of directions, questions from what's in there. And if you have not been a part of the process, it can throw you off because you might not know everything someone else had put in there. But if you've been a part of it, you know what went in there. And it's the best way to be a part so that you'll know what you're doing. And it's supposed to be a living document, not one you just put on the shelf. You're supposed to actually use that to kind of keep you on track as you, you know, start your business or operate your business.
Okay. So how do you educate, you know, most of these prospective entrepreneurs about risks in their business, like scams of some sort or bankruptcy, so to say?
Well, the speakers, the presenters for the workshops would deal with different topics. And most of them have some, you know, expert either experience in the field they're talking about, have actually good resources they could share with the person, the applicant, about, you know, risk taking and scams and that kind of thing. I mean, you're just not going to anyone that walk up to you accept what they say, you're going to do some research on your own, you know. So you just have to kind of keep your ears and be alert when you're dealing with people. You know, you can almost feel when something is not on the level, so to speak. You know, you just, that inner feeling is telling you this. And it's up to you to just go that extra step and try and find out whatever you can about it and seek the advice of expert. You should always have a good attorney, a good accounting that you're able to, you know, be able to get to fairly quick when you're going in this process. And they're the one that, you know, should kind of guide you, would guide you. You know, you have to be prepared to spend some money. Everything you need to do is not going to be free. And if you're not in a position to do that, it might not be the right time for you to even think about going in business.
Mm.
You know. Because usually what you get free, it's kind of limited. Right? And, you know, I'm not saying everything you need to do, you need to pay. There's a lot of good free information out there. But at some point, you need to have a lawyer that you can see is your lawyer, and the same thing with an accountant.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask about, well, this is kind of a confusing question, so I just made it up. It's mainly about, you know, the service.
Mm-hmm.
How do you offer some programs or workshops on how to get to know the community if you're a business owner?
Well, we have, and Jewel will probably talk a little bit about that also. We have a Merchants Association, and we strongly encourage all businesses to be a part of that, especially the new business. And they meet monthly, and you know, you network. Mm-hmm. As they say, networking works.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So they meet with other business owners, they meet with customers too?
Yeah, exactly. The Merchants Association, although its membership is basically business owners and what have you, but it's open to anyone. You know, if you feel you can benefit from being a member, I don't think they would turn you away.
Hmm.
You know.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a very difficult question. In your experience, has it been difficult for a woman to get a loan?
I don't think it's been any difficult as it been for any other, as it has been for a male. I think it probably be even keener from our perspective. You know, if they come in with meeting the criteria, I don't think gender plays a part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how convincing you are about what it is you're doing, and you'll be able to, you know, do what you say you're going to do. I think that carries more weight than gender.
Mm-hmm. Especially in the past?
Well, like I say, from my involvement, there's been no, well, naturally I'm a woman, so. But the process, see, I gather all the information, making sure that there's enough good information, but there's a committee, mm-hmm. what we call a loan review committee, who actually say the yes or no to the package. And I don't ever recall there being some prejudice against either gender.
Okay.
Mm.
I wanted to ask about redlining. Could you tell me more about that from the past?
Well, this is clearly, I guess, from, I guess you can say. Well, there are certain areas bank just will not go into or will not lend, and it might have to do with the crime rate, the population, you know, who's in that particular area. Can I say that I've experienced some evidence? I guess probably based on what I'm told when people come to apply for a loan, because my first question to them is always, you know, what bank do you deal with? And once they say, whatever bank, how long? And you tell me 15, 20 years or longer. So then I'm supposed to, next question, and you know, because that would be the first place I would go if I built that kind of relationship with something. So it's always a reason why they get no. And some of them are legit, you know, because everybody don't really take care of their business the same way. And sometimes people can be a little lax with things, not knowing down the road it's going to come back. You know, it would impact their life later on. But then there are some instances where it should be clear cut that this person should be able to get a loan from their bank, you know, because they seem to meet all of the other criteria that, you know, to qualify them. So you would have to say that there's some reason for them not. So, and where in another, say like someone out of another community, say a Park Slopes or a Clinton Hill or some other community, might have a better chance at getting a loan than. And same thing with mortgages, because I think, I've never bought property, so I can't speak from experience, but it's, you know, it's been rumored that, again, some areas banks would not go in. I think it's a lot different now, because in Bedford-Stuyvesant, and real estate is just prime now. Hmm. But there was a time when it was hard for homeowners to get mortgages. And I think that was one of the reasons why they, CRA Act was invented so that banks had to show that they did a certain amount of dollars of business in certain neighborhoods. The Community Reinvestment Act. Banks have to show or demonstrate that they do a certain amount of business in, you know, certain areas that might have been looked at as being redlined in the past.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, from your programs mm-hmm. and restoration, has there been any struggles or difficulties, and how have you been able to overcome those difficulties in the past?
Well, I guess to say that if everything was like easy, that would be a misquote. There would have been some difficulties. Probably in different areas. Finding enough qualified applicants, because like I say, we get people coming through the door, but a large number of them just not where they need to be at that point. Mm-hmm. Finding enough qualified applicants from the area. And maybe a better relationship with, say, the financial institution. So, and we're in there identifying clients, but maybe good clients, not someone they just don't want to tell no, so we'll send you next door and let them be the one to tell you. But just some good clients, you know, like, okay, this is not quite a fit, but, and maybe send them to us with some kind of little write-up that, you know, they maybe done some due diligence and this is a solid, but it just miss that criteria because he's only been in business 2 years, or he's only been in business 3 years, you know. Creating that kind of relationship, because I think that would have made our job not so much easier, but I think we would have had, you know, like a better pipeline coming to us. And of course, like most nonprofit, it never seemed probably to be enough staff to cover all the things that needs to be done. And okay, we've combated that some by using interns wherever we can and some of the other programs that provide us with youth workers during the summer for the staff piece. And we work every day at trying to create those kind of relationships with financial institutions that will give us, you know, some of the things we need to try and drive a pipeline from them, say, to us. We also, just try and get information out to the community, you know, like move better by doing, we advertise, there's a local newspaper we like to actually use that to try to reach residents or people who live in Bed-Stuy. And we also install the kiosks in the lobby that's able to be like a keep information flowing. You know, we're just trying to bridge the gap between the community and us so that they would know, they'll know we're here, and they would, you know, take better advantage of the services we provide.
Okay. Could you tell me more about some of the programs here at Restoration, for example, like housing?
You know, you might probably need, well, we have Neighborhood Homes is a program when, and I might not be giving the full details, so you might want to talk with someone else about it. They rehab some of the brownstones in different areas of Bed-Stuy. And they, I think there's a lottery process. You know, you put an application in, there's a lottery process. Of course, there are criteria to fit to be able to apply. And I think they kind of like target first-time home buyers. But there's some nice homes because there are brownstones who might have been in disrepair, or some the city might have taken over, and now they're repairing them. So you still have the same foundation from what was there. And they're just actually doing an excellent job at rehabbing them and then making them affordable for working families to be able to buy. That's what we're doing now in terms of housing, you know. A Restoration at one point was, I guess, a larger broker of houses. We used to have some housing sites that we no longer have now, but there was a mixture of low income and middle income during that time. But the houses now, I guess, are geared to maybe, well, you would have to say, I guess, more middle income, because who can afford to buy a $400,000 or $500,000 home unless you are kind of middle income? Mm. And I think our community need a larger population in that area, and that way it would make us healthier and economically if we got a larger population of maybe middle. You know, there need to be a balance. Hmm. We don't need a community of all, you know, like say low income, and it wouldn't be fair to have a community of all middle to high income. But if we get a nice balance, then I think our community would strive a lot more. So I see the need for developing, you know, homes or houses for that target area.
So do you believe that the neighborhood is kind of gentrified, so to say?
Well, what do you mean when you say gentrified?
Well,
I mean, it's open to anyone who can afford to buy a house.
Oh. I thought you meant like there's a new demographic coming in.
Well, again, it is, but I mean, like I say, whoever can afford to buy there, I think they should have a right to.
Oh, I see.
You know, it doesn't bother me unless you come and say, well, look, I'll get out of your house, I want it. You know, but if I have the money, I probably do the same thing. So I think it would almost be like discrimination if you didn't. You know, I think everybody should have the same chance at the house. It's just that, you know, some people might have managed their money differently and they're more able to move right on the spot than others, but we can't expect them to hold it until the other one catch up. You know, it's just there. If you got it, then you can buy it.
So it's just business, basically. It's just business. You know what you know, you have what you have, and if you don't have it, then you can't.
Well, maybe it's not that cut and dry, but I mean, if you know, we're buying, like something as big as buying a house or opening a business, you have to have a plan.
Okay.
So, and be serious about the plan, because you know, in, say you say in 10 years I'm gonna buy a house, then you have to work to be able to do that in 10 years. When the 10th year get there, you can't start then trying to put together money. You know what I'm saying? Because if you see your dream house, it's not gonna wait until you get the money up. The 10th year, you should say, well, look, go with your statue of money and say, look, I'm ready to buy this house. So you have to create a plan.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna move on with the arts here at Restoration. Do you know anything about the arts programs?
No.
No?
Not enough to be interviewed about it. I think you need to speak with our director of the arts program. Yeah.
I spoke to Miss Austin already.
Miss Austin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to know, like, if you know any of the programs here at Restoration.
Well, I mean, I try and encourage people to support them all, you know, because a few years back I used to volunteer with the dance program, and I know that was before Miss Austin was the director. It was a lady by the name of Marie Brooks at the time.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, she's the one kind of like birthed that program, so to speak, you know, and Miss Austin had picked it up and just kind of kept it going nicely. And I know what it did for kids and what it can do for them. And it's a way to keep them engaged in something that's positive and worthwhile. So, you know, I try and encourage as many people as I can whenever I have the opportunity to, you know, take advantage of it. As with any other programs, you know, we have in our Wright Center, we have a workforce development program. We also have and in that program, we do the job readiness, you know, I've been teaching people how to interview, you know, how you dress to go looking for a job, and helping them connect to, you know, sector training when the opportunity presents itself. So we just kind of announce each other's programs to as large a market as we come in contact with, so that people know we're here and what we're able to do. And the kind of programs we offer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, what can you say to visitors, people who want to start a business, homeowners, anybody from, anybody who wants to see Beverly Service, and why is it a great place for them to be in? How can you encourage other people to come to Beverly Service?
Because Bedford-Stuyvesant is a neighborhood that has a lot of history. We have probably the best housing stock in all of New York State. And you cannot beat the diversity of cultures here. You know, it's like you can just find almost anything you need to find in Bed-Stuy. And it's alive. Hmm. You know, it's alive. And I think that anyone should experience that as part of their livelihood, you know, home life, what have you. It's a neighborhood unlike any other neighborhood. And you can, and as far as Restoration, we are like in the hub of the community. And you can find a lot of things going on here. You know, it's almost like a one-stop shop. Some of the businesses in the plaza, you know, provide some of the other services that you need. We have a pharmacy, we have a supermarket, we have a restaurant, Applebee's, we have the clothing store, not a lot, and we have banks, we have several banks right here. So this is an area that you can get a lot of things done without moving out of the area. We have the theater. Can come if you want an afternoon out, you can come see a play and then go to Applebee's and have dinner. So and this is the kind of culture we're trying to create in the community, you know, by trying to entice some other maybe family style restaurants so that there'll be more choices. And there are other culture programs that's going on. I think you have the Wheatville Cultural Center. So, we're just trying to create that kind of atmosphere in the community.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, like, any final comments, anything that you left out that you'd like to share about, you know, just your experience in the field or anything about Restoration?
Well, I say Restoration is a wonderful organization to have been a part of and continue to be a part of all these years. You get to meet and greet and interact with a large, diversified group of people. You can get a chance to see the results of some of your labor because you can see what impact it makes on the people you serve. And it's just a great feeling to be a part of something that's developing, you know. And I love it. I love doing what I'm doing. I love where I am. And, you know, I would recommend the experience to anyone. Maybe not to stay 30 years, but I think it's an experience that anyone should test if they can, you know, if they have an opportunity, or, you know, similar, if they have do a similar experience, I think anyone should test that if they can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think we're done. If you have anything else to say.
No, I probably think of lots of things after this is over, but I think, you know, once you play back the tape, you'll determine whether or not it's...
Well, if you still have anything else to share, you can always contact me.
I will. I'll be glad to.
I'll give you my information.
Okay.
Okay. And thanks again for your time.
You're quite welcome, and thanks for asking.
Okay.